The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
Without freedom of the press, no democratic form of government could exist.
We switch you now to London.
I'm standing on a rooftop, looking out over London.
Good night, and good luck.
Good evening from our CBS newsroom in New York.
NBC presents Chet Huntley and David Brinkley.
From ABC, this is World News Tonight. With Peter Jennings in London, Max Robinson in Chicago, and from our desk in Washington, Frank Reynolds.
Good evening.
This historic legislation, the telecommunications law, will create many, many high-wage jobs, will create opportunity and better lives for all Americans.
When the press is free, the people of a country are free. When the press is not free, the people of a country are in danger of slavery.
Keeping you informed with information, news, and the views of people making the news. It's the Nicole Sandler Show on NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
Well, it's a Thursday. We've made it this far, and the day got off to a not a very good start because the House of Representatives passed the budget, the Senate budget. The House had already passed their own version of a budget blueprint. It's not actually a full budget, from what I can understand. This is all such confusing stuff. But this budget plan would pave the way for the tax cuts, what they call tax reform, but major tax cuts for the wealthiest among us that the Trump administration wants to push through. And the reason this budget plan was so important is because it allows them to do it with only 50 votes through reconciliation. From the New York Times, the House on Thursday sounded the starting gun on legislative efforts to cut taxes by as much as $1.5 trillion over the coming decade, narrowly clearing a budget blueprint that will allow a tax bill to pass Congress without any Democratic votes. See, that's the name of the game. As much as they criticized Obama for passing the Affordable Care Act with only Democratic votes, at least they did it with 60 votes. Yes, at that time, there were 60 Democratic votes. The good old days. But the Republicans only, they have 52 members in the Senate to 48 for the Democrats, actually 46 and two independents who caucus with the Democrats. The vote in the House was 216 to 212. So close. The budget measure cleared Congress over the loud protests of House members from high tax states like New York, New Jersey, and California, who worry that the blueprint will doom the current deduction for state and local taxes. Again, this isn't a full budget that that passed. It's the blueprint for the budget that is necessary in order to get to their tax cuts. And one of the things in the, and it's a 9-page outline. That's all we have at this point. Allegedly, on November 1st, there will be a bill that on November 6th, they'll begin doing the markups on. Again, I say allegedly because I'll believe it when I see it. So far, you know, there's a great quote in here from the only Florida Republican who voted against this thing, Matt Gaetz, I think is how you pronounce his name. He said, House Republicans were, quote, asked to vote for a budget that nobody believes in so that we have the chance to vote for a tax bill that nobody's read. Well, nobody's read it because it doesn't yet exist. But the things that they're floating in there, and again, it will increase the debt and the deficit, things that Republicans only give a shit about when there's a Democrat in the White House. When it's Republican rule, all bets are off. They don't care. They do not care about the debt and the deficit. It's a non-issue to them. It's just something they scream bloody murder about when Democrats are in control. Funny how that works, isn't it? Let's see, 20 Republicans voted against this House version of the Senate budget blueprint. 11 of them were from New York and New Jersey. Tom MacArthur, a Republican from New Jersey, said this is a big issue and it has to be resolved. Tax reform is good for the country. It's just not good for the country when it's on the back of six states. That's the problem. I'm wondering, I'm trying to figure out what the six states are. They're, New York, New Jersey, Connecticut, right? California, Massachusetts, and I can't figure out the sixth one. Maybe somebody in the chat room will know. But what they're doing, they're talking about making it so, and when you, if you live in those states, you know that when you do your taxes, you can deduct from your federal income taxes your state and local income tax. Now, I live in Florida, which has no state tax. So, you know, that's one good thing about Florida. But I remember I lived most of my life in either New York or California, and that was a big deal. What is it? Illinois. You know, I thought it was Illinois, but I wasn't sure. That makes sense. Illinois is the sixth state. So there you go. Those are the six states that pay the highest in state and local taxes. And all those citizens, all those middle-class, hardworking people are going to be hit with a major tax increase, because if you can't deduct your state and local taxes, that's a huge hit. The other thing that is in here is the 401k, where now you can contribute up to $18,000 a year into your 401k, and it's tax deferred. You don't pay the taxes on it until you pull the money out, with the thought being that if you pull the money out of your 401k after you're retired, you're going to be in a lower tax bracket than you are while you're working. So you'll pay less. Well, they're talking about bringing that, the amount you can contribute, down from $18,000 a year to $2,400 a year. And they say this is a tax cut for the middle class. Let's see. The deficit, by the way, for 2017 fiscal year, which ended September 30th, totaled $666 billion. That's an increase of $80 billion from the previous year. So if you think Donald Trump is, you know, just a regular guy and he's going to cut spending and cut the deficit, boy, have you been bamboozled. The outline of this tax plan that was unveiled in September would cut the corporate income tax rate to 20% from 35, collapse individual income tax brackets from 7 to 3, with tax rates of 12%, 25%, and 35%. By the way, right now the lowest tax bracket is 10%, so that's also a raise on the lowest income people who pay taxes. Right? It would double the standard deduction to $12,000 for individuals and to $24,000 for married couples filing jointly. Let's see, what else does this tell? But, you know, this just shows what hypocrites the Republicans are, if you didn't already know it. And by the way, Jeff Flake, who got up on the Senate floor the day before yesterday, and said this.
Mr. President, I rise today to say enough.
He's not doing nearly enough. And that's one of the things we're going to talk about with Howie Klein today. It's also the title of, sort of the title of the Washington Post editorial that ran yesterday. Jeff Flake's diagnosis is right, but it's not enough. He says enough. He voted for this budget in the Senate. He voted to gut consumer protections just after he made that great eloquent speech 2 days ago. He voted with all but two of his Republican Senate colleagues to undo a protection that was ushered in during the Obama years. It was a protection under the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau that allowed consumers to file class action suits against big banks and credit card companies. They overturned that. This is Jeff Flake, who's, yeah, speaking out against Trump, but not doing nearly enough. He is still a conservative. And, you know, there's a chance that he'll vote for this crappy tax break, the tax cuts for the richest among us. By the way, the one to watch on that is Bob Corker, who very loudly said, if it adds one more dime to the deficit, I'm going to vote against it. So Bob Corker might be a hope on that. But we're going to talk to Howie Klein about Jeff Flake and how just being an anti-Trump does not make one a progressive at all. All right, let's take a time out for the news. We'll check the news with What's News and with Victoria Jones from the Talk Media News Service before we check in with Howie Klein.
It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
The House of Republicans voted Thursday morning to pass the GOP budget plan by a narrow margin of 216 to 212, the first step toward the president's plan for large-scale tax cuts. Some Republicans vowed opposition over the proposal to eliminate a federal deduction for state and local income taxes, which would hit the middle-class voters in high-tax states like New York, New Jersey, California, and Massachusetts. Another provision which would severely cut the amount one could contribute to their 401k plans is also a point of contention. The Daily Beast reported Wednesday that the head of Cambridge Analytica asked Julian Assange of WikiLeaks for help in finding Hillary Clinton's 33,000 deleted emails. CNN has more.
Sources tell CNN that the head of Cambridge Analytica, a data firm working for the Trump campaign, reached out to WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange during the campaign, asking about Hillary Clinton's missing emails. Julian Assange acknowledged this today on Twitter, that that did happen. He says he rejected the request. So the head of the firm, Alexander Nix, sent an email to several people, including top Republican donor Rebecca Mercer, relaying that he had reached out to Assange. But sources tell us, my colleague Dan and abashed that no one from the actual Trump campaign was on the email chain. For context, WikiLeaks was responsible for releasing hacked emails from the DNC and Clinton campaign chairman John Podesta's emails last year, but not Hillary Clinton's emails. We don't even know if those missing emails were ever hacked, ever obtained. And WikiLeaks has been called out by the U.S. intelligence community as a propaganda arm of the Russians. So this new revelation establishes the closest known link between the Trump campaign and WikiLeaks, and it happened while Trump was on the campaign trail, increasingly criticizing Hillary Clinton for deleting thousands of emails from her private server. We should mention the Daily Beast was first to report the email outreach to WikiLeaks. And just a short time ago, the Trump campaign head, Michael Glassner, sent out a statement seemingly obfuscating the core issue here. This is what he says. We as a campaign made the choice to rely on the voter data of the Republican National Committee to help elect President Donald J. Trump. And he claims the voter data from any other source played a key role in the victory are false. So as you see, the statement doesn't have anything to do with the main issue here of a data firm hired by the Trump campaign reaching out to WikiLeaks about Clinton's stolen emails.
The NAACP has warned African Americans to exercise caution when traveling on American Airlines, citing a pattern of disrespectful and discriminatory behavior from the company. The organization's warning came in the form of a travel advisory that described four recent times when black passengers were said to have been discriminated against. The NAACP said the similarity of the episode suggested, quote, a corporate culture of racial insensitivity and possible racial bias. A federal judge ruled Wednesday that the Trump administration does not need to resume paying the cost-share subsidies under the Affordable Care Act, saying that the administration appears to initially have the stronger legal argument over its decision to stop the payments. Premiums for the most popular plans are expected to rise an average of 34%. Window shopping on healthcare.gov went live Wednesday. Open enrollment begins November 1st. The sexual harassment charges keep coming. A second woman has come forward to claim that former President George H.W. Bush also allegedly fondled her during a photo op. Actress Jordana Gronick said, quote, he reached his right hand around to my behind, and as we smiled for the photo, he asked the group, do you want to know who my favorite magician is? As I felt his hand dig into my flesh, he said, David Copperfield. Bush spokesman Jim McGrath said in a statement that because President Bush has been in a wheelchair for 5 years, his arm falls on the, quote, lower waist. He continued, to try to put people at ease, the president routinely tells the same joke, and on occasion he has patted women's rears in what he intended to be a good-natured manner. To anyone he has offended, President Bush apologizes most sincerely. Five women have come forward alleging that veteran journalist Mark Halperin sexually harassed them while he was political director at ABC News. CNN broke the story.
Veteran journalist and political analyst Mark Halperin is leaving NBC News after CNN uncovered accusations of sexual harassment by five women. The women say the incidents happened during his time as political director at ABC News. NBC releasing a statement saying, we find the stories and allegations very troubling. Mark Halperin is leaving his role as a contributor until the questions around his past conduct are fully understood. Halperin issued an apology in which he admitted to pursuing relationships with female staffers, even those, some that were his juniors, and he says he now understands his behavior was inappropriate. I mean, this conversation just continues. Every day, there's some sort of revelation and people having to respond to it.
Halpern has been suspended from his role as an analyst at NBC News. MSNBC's Morning Joe co-host Mika Brzezinski addressed the allegations Thursday morning.
Now to a story that broke overnight involving someone you see around this table every day. CNN is reporting allegations regarding our friend Mark Halpern during his time at ABC News over a decade ago. Unnamed sources detailing unwanted advances and inappropriate behavior. Halpern apologized for the pain his actions caused and said, quote, I will take a step back from my day-to-day work while I properly address this situation. We're going to be following this story as it develops. I'm sure we'll be talking about it again when we know more about it.
And that's a bit of What's News for Now. I'm Nicole Sandler. If you appreciate these reports and the Nicole Sandler Show, I hope you'll consider a contribution. My work is 100% listener-funded, and I can't do it without you. Find out more at NicoleSandler.com/donate. For a bit more of the news, we turn to our friends at the Talk Media News Service, TalkMediaNews.com, to find out what else is going on. Victoria Jones is on the line today. Hey, Victoria.
Hi, Nicole.
So the House voted early today. And now, what they passed, was that the actual budget or just a budget blueprint?
It's a budget resolution. And so what it does is it clears the way for tax reform. And we don't know what is in the tax bill yet.
Right, so, because it's not written yet.
Right, but we will find out next week.
Yeah, that's what they say. November 1st, it'll be out and start markups on November 6th.
Right, because they want this thing passed by Thanksgiving, and they want the whole thing done by the end of the year. Now, so November 23rd is Thanksgiving, but of course they're not in session that week, so that effectively means that they really have to get it done by November 16th, November 17th at the latest, unless they're going to be held over that week. And Mitch McConnell, the majority leader in the Senate, has threatened to hold the Senate in session the week of Thanksgiving, and that's pretty unprecedented.
Is it? Well, you know,
yeah.
let them work. This is still going to be a tough fight, though, isn't it? Because of the a few sticking points, the main one being the deductions for state and local income taxes.
Yes, I mean, the vote this morning was 216 to 212, 216 to 212, and 20 Republicans voted no. And they were nearly all from, you know, fairly popular states, New York and New Jersey. So, that, yes, it was. And if they don't do something about this state and local tax deduction, they may have some problems on their hands. They may also have some problems on their hands with some conservatives. There are some issues there. Obviously, they've got problems, on their hands with Democrats, but they're not that concerned about that because they have got it through. They are able to do this through reconciliation now, which means they only need 51 votes in the Senate.
Right. Well, they only need 50 because Mike Pence is the 51st. So,
right, correct.
Right. So they can afford to lose two senators. That's all.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. So, it is still tight.
Yeah. So there's no guarantees they can get this done. But it's going to be a squeaker regardless. This is not good for the stomach. It makes my stomach jump.
It is still tight. And there's an interesting article in Bloomberg today talking about how, you know, there's the same bickering, the same secrecy, the same behind-the-scenes-ness, if you like, I just made that word up, going on as there was with Obamacare reform that may not bode well. I mean, maybe it'll bode better for the Republicans from their point of view this time, but it's the same behind-the-scenes stuff as went on with Obamacare reform. They're doing it the same way.
Yeah, everything they accuse the Democrats of doing, which, by the way, on passing the Affordable Care Act, they did not do. That was a two-year process that had umpteen hearings and rewrites, and it was written in three different committees. I mean, I've talked about this so many times, yet they accuse the Democrats of, you know, passing it through in the dead of night with, you know, they did do it with no Republican votes, but they got 60 votes.
So, they did. They did get 60 votes, and they had hearings. Now, that takes us to another thing. Are they going to have hearings? They don't have a lot of time if they're going to have hearings and go through the committee process. If they're going to start marking this up on the 6th, it doesn't leave a lot of time for actual hearings.
No, it really doesn't. And John McCain has said, you know, he won't vote for anything that foregoes the, what he called, the regular order. Now, then again, he voted for this budget budget resolution, which I guess on its own doesn't do much except it lets them do their tax reform, as they're calling it, through reconciliation. I mean, is that the only thing in it that this actually accomplished? I mean, it's a big thing.
It is, you know, it's significant tax cuts. I think it's something like $10 trillion of tax cuts or something like. It's a huge amount of tax cuts over a decade, but it's also something like $1.5 trillion in the increase in the deficit.
That's right.
Over the same period of time.
That's right. And by the way, huge cuts to Medicare and Medicaid are in this, and it's something that they don't talk about and something that Donald Trump promised he wasn't going to do.
And the cuts to Medicare and Medicaid that so far Republicans have sort of said, well, you know, maybe, maybe not. At some point when the bill comes out, things will be spelled out. And it will be clear what is a cut and what isn't a cut and what is going on. And it will no longer be possible to say, well, maybe it isn't in there, you know, look in the other direction. There's another bright, shiny object, you know, turn the channel to Buffy the Vampire Slayer, you know. It won't be possible to do any of those things anymore.
Well, they'll try. They'll keep trying. Something will happen. Donald Trump will tweet at some other person and get into a god-awful fight with somebody he shouldn't be fighting with to get our attention off of what's really important.
Who knows? I mean, you know, meanwhile, the JFK document is coming out today.
Yes.
That's going to get a lot of attention.
So when does that happen?
I think they're coming out roundabout now, but the thing is, there's going to be so much redaction, so many names are going to be in code that it's going to be, you know, even if you are a very serious journalist who's worked on this before, if you're a historian who's written books, you know, or you're a buff of this, from my understanding from just reading quite a bit about this release is you're not going to understand it. Immediately, partly because of the way they're dumping this, which is to do it all in one dump, rather in batches, which is how they've done it before. And you can't understand it immediately. You can't understand the context, and it's going to take a while to wade through it and to figure out, well, who are these people? What does it mean? There's just too much. So somebody who tells you in 3 hours, guess what, we figured out X, Y, and Z, I would be very suspicious of that.
Sure. Sure. So that's happening today. Something else that happened today at the White House, they had an event to deal with the opioid crisis, but Trump, he stopped short of calling it a national emergency, right? What's going on with this?
Yeah, it's a public health emergency. And so, which means that certain things are freed up. It cuts through some red tape. He gave a fairly lengthy speech. Melania spoke first. She told some moving stories. There's a big crowd in the East Room. And he said there's a big commitment, you know, by America. And I'm sure that speech will be gone through very carefully, but what is exactly in it? But what isn't in it is extra cash. Because it wasn't the kind of emergency under the Stafford Act that frees up cash. And this is where the state are taking issue with it, because they're saying it's all very well to say we're committed, and one of the things that Trump was touting was a big advertising campaign. He touted a number of things, but was they're saying we need cash.
Right. Well, and I guess that's where the semantics come into play, whether it's a national emergency or a health, what do you say, a health emergency?
A public health public emergency, health. Yeah.
Yep.
And they're saying, well, the kind of emergency under the Stafford Act is really for a tornado or a hurricane or something like that. And the states are saying that's pretty much what this is. You've got, you know, nearly something... I haven't got the number right, but it's, you know, well over 100 people dying every day.
Yeah. No, it's insane what's going on. It's frightening.
Yeah.
So what else is happening today, Victoria?
Let's see. Other things that are going on today. You've got this astonishing story coming out of Texas of Rosa Maria Hernandez, this 10-year-old girl with cerebral palsy. Have you been following this
yes,
story?
Yes, it's horrible.
It's quite extraordinary, and we don't know what the end of this story will be yet. This is a little girl who went to have, an operation, went to have surgery. She's undocumented, and she went with an American citizen relative, and somebody tipped them off. The first story I saw in the local Texas newspaper said that they didn't say this was who had tipped them off, but said that a nurse in the hospital spotted that she was undocumented, but did not say that was the person. But we don't know how they found out, but they did find out. And anyway, they sat outside her hospital room, and now they've removed her to juvenile detention, and they're starting deportation proceedings against the 10-year-old.
Unbelievable.
Disabled.
Wow. Stunning.
Stunning. And the according to the local paper, the doctor's discharge notes say that in 3 days from the hospital, she should see her local doctor for follow-up, and that she should be released to her family, who best know her medical and psychological needs.
Wow. Wow. But instead, she'll be deported somewhere as a 10-year-old with who knows what's waiting for her wherever she's deported to.
She came to this country when she was 3 months old.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, my God.
Yeah. 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 This is a very, very, very sad story. Very sad story. So there's that going on. Meantime, you have a series of Democratic senators who are introducing legislation that would make it so that Congress would have to mandate a first strike, a first
yes.
nuclear strike.
Yes, because right now, that's when we're talking, Congress has the power to declare war, not that they ever use it, and they're still operating off the AUMF from 9/11. But when it comes to nukes, it's up to the president.
Yes, exactly. He can do anything. Now, his defense secretary, my understanding is, can turn around and say, no, you can't do it. But he can turn around and dismiss his defense secretary. So there is actually no stopping the person, whoever that president is. So they are introducing this bill to say, no, actually not so much. We don't want that.
Yeah, that's Ted Lieu in the House and Ed Markey in the Senate.
Yes.
They've been working on this for quite a while. And,
yes.
We should all thank them for that.
Yes, so we'll see where that goes. They would obviously have to get some Republicans on board, too. So it will remain to be seen whether there are Republicans who will actually come with them on this. Some of the Republicans, perhaps, who are critical of President Trump, who would actually, you know, step up and say, yeah, we have a problem with this too.
I could see even some who aren't critical of Trump should do it, because Congress is the one who's supposed to declare war. And, you know, just in keeping with that, even if they don't want to publicly say that he scares the bejesus out of them, they could come up with other reasons to get behind this, because it's the logical thing to do.
It's really an astonishing astonishing amount of power for one human being.
That's right. Yes, it
I'm
is.
I'm outside.
I hear. I hear. How's the weather in D.C. today? It's kind of chilly down here in Florida.
It is chilly. There is a little bit of a wind. There are leaves. I can literally see leaves right in front of me. I'm in Lafayette Park. There are leaves coming down. There is a wind, but it is sunny. So it's pretty, but I don't think it's going to make it out of the 50s. And this is the first day it's actually been like this.
Well, here in South Florida, you know, and I'm in the Fort Lauderdale area, it was in the 50s this morning. So we got our first cold snap, and it, you know, for down here, that's cold.
That is not like Florida, right?
No, not at all.
Now.
And game two of the World Series, they played ball. It was, I think, 93, which was 10 degrees cooler than for game one. So, but there's no climate change going on. Nah.
No. This is just happening. It's weather.
Yes, it is weather. That's what it is. Victoria Jones of the Talk Media News Service. Find him at talkmedianews.com. Thank you so much, Victoria.
Thank you.
Take care.
Bye bye.
All right. Howie Klein is on the way. We'll talk with Howie today again about just because you're anti-Trump, it does not mean that you are a progressive. There's a whole big chasm in there. So Howie Klein is up next. Stick around. I'm Nicole Sandler.
Can't afford a monthly donation? Is that what's getting you down, Bunky? But maybe you shop on Amazon.com occasionally?
Well then, just use the NicoleSandler.com Amazon portal and we'll get a small commission on all your purchases.
But I just bought...
Don't worry, we can't see what you bought.
Just bookmark Amazon through the NicoleSandler.com portal and use it. Every purchase helps Nicole stay on the air.
Are you a multinational corporation hungry for a treat? Well, come on down to Schmucky Chucky's, where you'll personally be seated by Chuck Schumer himself.
So many dishes, and they're all fresh.
You're gonna love our Blue Dog special, the Dino Burger, because we say so.
A good hamburger and french fries.
And every burger comes with a side order of...
Grits. I love grits. I love anything with corn. It's corn.
All for only $50,000. Wash it all down with a Dirty Debbie.
9/10 water, 1/10 orange juice. After a week or two, you drink this, it's 200 calories and it's acidic.
And wipe your mouth with a tissue print of Glass-Steagall. For dessert, try our DNC tarts.
Little cookies, tell the quality of that.
Most restaurants give you a mint, but at Schmucky Chucky's, you get complimentary.
Sweet and low.
Who picks up the tab for all this? Find out now with Howie Klein of DownWithTyranny.com on The Nicole Sandler Show.
Hello, Howie Klein.
Hello, Nicole. How are you doing?
I'm doing just fine. Well, you know, all things considered. always have to qualify that these days because the world is so crazy. But we got to thank Ted Lieu for introducing legislation to... make a first strike capability have to go through Congress rather than just the whim of the president, you know, with nukes. You're aware of this, right?
Oh, yes. I've been writing about it for months. I mean, Ted has been trying to push this. He's got some co-sponsors in the Senate now who are pushing it.
Yeah,
in
Ed
a
Markey.
More profile way. But Ted has been working on this for months and months. He has the ability to look forward and see what's coming and try to head it off at the pass. Unfortunately, the Democrats who control their part of the agenda didn't see it the same way that Ted did and didn't really, until recently, they didn't see it as crucial as you're seeing it.
Wow. Now that's stunning because look, he's a loose cannon in every respect. And with all the craziness coming out of North Korea and out of Trump's mouth, or I should say his Twitter thumbs, anything could happen.
Yeah. And you were right. We have to thank Ted Lieu for having that foresight and acting on it and writing the legislation. I think he did it with, Senator Markey of Massachusetts.
That's right.
And there are others now who are jumping on that bandwagon. and getting behind it, finally.
Right.
It's
well,
been a long time.
Victoria Jones, who does news, who just she brought it up just a few minutes ago. So obviously it's getting some traction. And she said, you know, obviously they'll need some Republicans to get on board. And she was saying, you know, possibly some of the ones who've been speaking out against Trump. And my point was, it's not even going to take that. I mean, I would think all Republicans should get on board because the awesome power of nuclear weapons shouldn't be in the hands of one person, whether it's Donald Trump or Barack Obama.
Yeah, I think Ted rounded up a couple of Republicans already. I don't know that any of the Senate Republicans have jumped in, but I believe that Ted had a couple of House Republicans who would either, I think one signed on, and there were like two others who were saying they're going to sign on. I'm not exactly sure where it is right now. I'm going to see Ted over the weekend, and I can ask him what's up with that. But yeah, there were. I don't know if it was Justin Amash who was, Walter Jones was interested, Thomas Massie from Kentucky. There were a few Republicans that said that they liked the approach. You know, in their mind, it wasn't about Trump. It wasn't about Trump. It was just good policy anyway,
right.
For any president, regardless of who. Obviously, it was only written because of Trump. But you know, they're trying to be sure that they can go back to their base and say they're not making a move against Trump.
Right.
No one will believe it.
Right, of course, no. but it shouldn't. It doesn't necessarily have to be about Trump. It's the fact they're nuclear weapons. Oh my God! And Congress is the one who's supposed to declare war. Now, it would be a lot easier to convince people it wasn't about Trump if they hadn't still been, you know, the Green Berets who were in Niger weren't there based on the 2001 authorization for use of military force. You know that they haven't. They're still operating all of our deployments around the world on that AUMF.
Right.
Yeah.
The danger here when we start getting into the politics, though, is that a majority of people who voted for Trump, so not a majority of Americans, mm-hmm. but not the Democrats, not independents, and not half the Republicans, but a little more than half the Republicans, or half the Trump voters, I should say, actually want Trump to immediately, meaning today, start a preemptive war with North Korea.
Oh, my God.
They want it now. They want it right now. So just think about that.
Oh, my God. Well, that just shows, you know, why education is so important. I'm stunned by that. I hadn't heard that before.
Yeah, that showed up in a poll about a week ago. And in terms of education being important, Trump showed how important he thinks it is by appointing Betsy DeVos
right.
to be the head of the Department of Education.
Right. Well, the same way, just and how important nuclear weapons are and how, you know, awesome, and I don't mean it by great, I mean, what you know, mind-blowing, awesome.
Earth-shaking,
right, world-changing, you know, planet-destroying, awesome power of nukes by appointing Rick Perry Secretary of Energy, not knowing that, you know, Rick Perry didn't know that you know, oversees the nuclear weapons. it's scary stuff. Now, I brought this up about Ted Lieu and the reason they don't have to be necessarily against Trump to vote in favor of that bill, should it ever come to the floor. And because it's Ted Lieu and Ed Markey, it probably won't until and unless the Democrats get back control of Congress.
Right.
Is that you've got a piece coming out tonight at Down with Tyranny. They're both important, but there's a big difference from being anti-Trump and being progressive. This week we saw Jeff Flake, you know, rise to say enough. But we also, the night that he gave that speech, what was it 2 days ago, he went ahead and voted to curtail consumer protections against big banks and credit card companies. He's still voting with Trump over 90% of the time, yet, you know, it's one thing to speak out against him, but if you're going to still vote for everything that he stands for, what good is it?
Well, okay. I mean, that's a good question. And the thing is that in most cases, well, Trump doesn't stand for anything but Trump.
Right.
But in most cases, the Republican agenda is very much what Jeff Flake stands for. Like, mm-hmm. make no mistake. No one should make any mistake. Jeff Flake may be an honorable man. You can think of him that way. I mean, other people make another case about him. But if you want to think of Jeff Flake as an honorable man, which is reasonable, you also have to remember that Jeff Flake is a diehard conservative.
Yep.
The reason that Jeff Flake was the one who was picked when Senator Kyle decided to retire, the reason that Jeff Flake was the one that was picked is because he was the furthest right. He was the most conservative of all of the Arizona Republican politicians. They picked him because he was so extreme. I mean, he is not a moderate on
right.
any level.
No.
And in terms of policy that you were just talking about, of voting for the Trump agenda, or the Republican agenda is a better way to put it, that's Jeff Flake's agenda. He's not voting for Trump. He's voting for what he believes in. So when you look at guys like Bob Corker, the other one who mm-hmm. is anti-Trump now, you and Flake, they're never going to vote the way we want them to vote. That ain't going to happen. Now, they're anti-Trump, but they're not moderate. They're not, let alone progressive. I mean, that's a joke. When you look at the Republican senators who are actually, you know, kind of, you know, lean a little bit on the moderate side for one reason or another, like Susan Collins from Maine or Lisa Murkowski from Arizona.
Alaska.
Compared to McCain, compared to Flake, compared to Corker, those two women are kind of moderate, and
mm-hmm.
they sometimes do, not often, but they sometimes do vote with the Democrats. But the thing is that they can all be anti-Trump and still, you know, be conservative. Even in the Democratic Party, people are making mistakes all the time in terms of, oh yeah, I'm going to support so and so. He's a progressive. He's against Trump. No.
Right.
The two things are not the same. My congressman is Adam Schiff. He's a conservative Democrat. He was a blue dog for many years. Now he's a new Dem. He has a long record of being a conservative Democrat, but he's very, very anti-Trump, and he's doing some really good anti-Trump work. And then I see some of my neighbors going into his events here in the area and donating money to him, thinking wrongly that he's a progressive like
mm-hmm.
they are
mm-hmm.
because he's anti-Trump. And people don't understand that the two things are not related at all,
right.
not in any way. So just because someone wants to protect the country from this madman or wants to protect the Constitution from this crazy person, that doesn't make them a progressive. Whether they're a Democrat or a Republican. So, you know, and then, you know, friends of mine, people I like and respect, will say, you know, Howie, it doesn't matter now. The only thing that matters is protecting the country from Trump, and that's it.
And there's a point there. There's a point to be made there that is the greater good right now.
Yep. But, you know, this is primary season.
Mm-hmm.
When you're talking about elections.
Yeah.
So, you know, you go to Chicago, for example, and you don't have to choose between a Republican and a Democrat or a Trump supporter and a non-Trump supporter. You can pick between a conservative Democratic incumbent like Dan Lipinski, who, you know, is anti-choice, who's anti-gay, who's anti-immigrant. I mean, this guy has a voting record that goes back years and years. He is anti-choice. He votes that way.
Hmm.
He is anti-gay. He
mm-hmm.
votes that way. He writes anti-gay legislation. This guy hates immigrants, and
wow.
he writes legislation and co-sponsors legislation to express that. So he's the Democratic incumbent. Progressives have put up, or backing, I should say, she put herself up, a woman who is an actual progressive. Both of them just say, for I don't know if you know if you can measure it, but just say both Lipinski and Marie Newman, the progressive who's running in that race, just say they're both equally anti-Trump.
Mm-hmm.
That isn't what that election is about. That election is about a extremely conservative blue dog who is a danger to women's health, who is a danger to the LGBT community, who is a danger to immigrants. He's running for re-election, and here we have a very stalwart, principled progressive in Marie Newman running against him. And that is very, very important. And I will talk to donors now, to asking them, for example, to support Marie, and they'll say, hey, you know, Howie, what's important now is going after Trump, and we don't care about anything else.
Wow. You know, you mentioned this is primary season, and primary season, that's, you know, what the old saying goes, when you fall in love in the primaries, you fall in line during the general election. This is when you go for your wish list. You go for the best of the best. You go for the real progressives in the primary season. And, you know, chances are, depending on where you are, they can actually win.
Yep. And in the seat that I'm talking about in Chicago, there's no Republican that's going to win that seat.
Mm-hmm.
If a Republican even runs, it's just a vanity candidate who just wants to have their name on the ballot. No one thinks they can win. It's a Democratic district. The people who live there are Democrats. They won't know, unfortunately, if it's Lipinski or Newman who's running. It doesn't matter to them. They just vote Democratic, most of them. Obviously, there are some who are smart and know what they're doing and care, and they're activists. But most people are just Democrats in a district like that, just like most people in other districts, like in, you know, Mississippi or Alabama or Wyoming, are Republicans, and they don't care either. But in districts like that, it's just essential to make sure that it's the progressive that's on the ballot. And you'll hear from, the liars at the DCCC who just lie all the time. And they'll say, well, in conservative districts, we have to have moderate candidates. Well, who says that?
Right.
That's not true. And why say that? It isn't true. It, just by repeating it over and over again, doesn't make it real. It's just their stupid perspective that doesn't work and isn't real and doesn't do anything. And on the other hand, the districts that they're defining as being, conservative districts, they're not. They're talking about this in many cases. They're talking about the districts that Bernie won.
Mm-hmm.
They're talking about districts that in the primary, Bernie didn't just beat Hillary. Bernie beat Trump.
Right.
There are dozens and dozens of districts like that all over the country. Well, if these people came out and voted for Bernie in greater numbers than they voted for Hillary and greater numbers than they voted for Trump, what does that tell you about what those people in those districts want? Do they want another shill conservative Democrat? Are they looking for a blue dog like the DCCC is trying to shove down their throats? No. They want someone who, like Bernie, believes in a set of goals for this country to make this a better place to live.
Mm-hmm.
And why is the DCCC trying to torpedo candidates like that and replace them, you know, with dozens of self-funding millionaires? I mean, I've never seen it as bad as it is this year. Pelosi has gone out of her mind. She's literally insane now. All she wants is multimillionaires running for Congress.
Wow.
She's trying to kill working class aspirations, the aspirations of working class candidates. She's trying to destroy them. Wherever you go, she's trying to put her wealthy friends into Democratic nomination. These people aren't even real Democrats. I mean, you know, she would murder me for saying that, but it's true. These are rich people. They don't know what it's like. The Democratic Party is the vehicle for the aspirations of the working class and the middle class, and she's putting up all these millionaires. And to do it, she is doing everything she can to harm legitimate working class candidates. What does a school teacher do when Nancy Pelosi is backing someone who can stick $1 million or $2 million into a campaign? There's one guy who lost his race last time. He was running against one of the best, a guy who is now one of the best progressives in Congress. The progressive won this race that I'm talking about. It's a race in Maryland. Open seat, Democratic district, and Jamie Raskin won the race.
Oh, right. But yeah, he's great.
I know Jamie for years. He's a regular middle-class guy. He's not a steel worker, but he was a professor. He didn't have any money to put up for his race, and he ran against several, not one, but several self-funding multimillionaires, one of whom was Chris Matthews' wife.
Right, right.
But the big spender in that race, she put up plenty of money herself, but the big spender in that race was a guy who's got a beer and wine distribution company, and he put up $13.5 million.
Wow.
This is what he spent on his own race, $13.5 million. That's unheard of. That's unbelievable. And he's running again, since he lost, he's running again in a different district, a nearby district that he doesn't live in. He's running there, and what he said is that he lost last time because he didn't spend enough money, and this time he's going to spend whatever it takes to win.
Oh, my God. But the fact
so
that
how
Jamie...
How does a school teacher or a fireman
right.
or any kind of normal person...
An iron run worker. Again?
You know, what are we going to have, just millionaires running Congress? It's more and more that way all the time. I mean, when I was a kid, it wasn't like that.
Mm-hmm.
And now, thanks to Nancy Pelosi, that's all the Democratic Party wants is a bunch of millionaires. I mean, you've got a district here, a working class, middle class district. Not a rich district. The average income, I'm talking about California 39, the average income in that district is $80,000 a year. So it's not a poor district,
mm-hmm.
but it's a normal American middle-class district. They've got some people who make a lot more than that,
right.
and they've got some people who make a lot less than that. And they have four self-funders,
wow.
including one guy who came in and went, boom, here's $2 million in my race. Put $2 million out of his pocket. First quarter, he's in the race. Boom, $2 million. Maybe next quarter, he'll put in $5 million. I don't know. And he's not the only one. There are three others in that race that are self-funding to the tune of six or seven figures.
That's
how does a normal
horrible.
Person run against them?
Well, you know, not easily, but the fact that Jamie Raskin won that race says something, that it is possible, but you've got to rise above the insanity, and you will be the
Hugh
underdog.
Raskin, one of the best candidates who ran anywhere in the country last cycle. I mean, brilliant guy,
mm-hmm.
absolutely brilliant guy, and he made it. He didn't make it by a lot, by the way. In that primary, the Trone, the multi-billionaire, whatever, he came in very, very close, very close second, and Chris Matthews' wife came in third.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't remember how much money she put into it. It was about $500,000, but one of the things that was going on there, which was that anyone who Chris Matthews had as a regular guest on his program would be hit up to donate to her campaign.
Oh my God!
I mean, how outrageous is that?
That is, and
how outrageous is it that the Democratic Party is becoming the party of millionaires?
It's
horrible. We have a Republican Party for that. That's what they are.
Right. So, Howie, you're talking about, you know, just because you're anti-Trump, it doesn't make you necessarily a progressive. Just because you're a Democrat, that also doesn't make you progressive. And that's, you know, that's one of the problems that the Democratic Party has. In focus groups and in polls, you keep hearing that the Democratic Party, people still don't know what they stand for, and it's not enough just to be anti-Trump. And so, as you know, you say, it's the candidates who tell us what they stand for. Those are the ones we want to hear from.
Right. I still go on these, someone will tell me, oh, so-and-so is running for Congress. What do you think? And I'll go look at their website and no issues page.
Right.
Nothing. You don't have any idea who they are or what. I mean, you may know who they are because they'll do a page and it'll be about themselves.
Mm-hmm.
This is who I am. This is what I've accomplished. I am so great. If you're lucky, I will be your representative and you can worship me. But how about what the candidate is going to do for them? How about for the voters, for the constituents of that district? What are they offering? You don't know. You don't have any idea. I mean, I don't know if these people are going to be any good or not. Usually, if they're going to be any good, they actually do an issues page, and they're proud to say that they want to have Medicare for all, for example.
Mm-hmm.
But as soon as you see a candidate running who doesn't have an issues page, you got to start to worry. You've got to ask them, What do you stand for? And you want to hold them their feet to the fire. I mean, you know, I talked to this one guy, Andrew Janz. I may have told you about this already, but it bears repeating. Andrew Janz is running against one of the arch villains, who just because of who and what he is, this guy should lose his seat. And a lot of people in his district feel that way. The guy I'm talking about is Devin Nunes.
Oh yeah,
one of the Trump characters from Putingate.
Right.
And this guy, you know, he never has been, the DCCC has never challenged him once. Not one time in his entire career has he ever had a serious challenge. They just leave it alone. This is a district where the largest single ethnic group is Hispanic. And the DCCC just doesn't even bother to help get these people registered or get them to vote. They just leave it alone. And they just let Devin Nunes have his seat with no one bothering him. Well, now Ted Lieu, who we were talking about earlier, is the vice chair of the region for the DCCC, and he doesn't feel that way. He feels that Devin Nunes needs to be challenged.
Yes.
So the first guy who jumps into the race is a guy named Andrew Janz. And I'm thinking, okay, great. Let me talk to Andrew and see what he stands for. And I call him up. He calls me back. We start talking. And I asked him if it was okay for me to ask him some questions about policy, since he had nothing on his website about it. And he said, sure. So I started with health care. And I asked him if he's a single payer. And he said, what's that?
Uh-oh.
And I said, you know, Medicare for all. He said, I don't know what that is.
Oh, no.
But it was very dismissive. And this was a few months ago. He knows what it is now, but this is when he was just getting started. He's been told what those things are now. But then he said to me, can I just tell you what motivates me to run? And I said, Andrew, that's exactly what I want to hear. Tell me what motivates you to run. And he brought up two things that are motivating him. One is how much he loves the death penalty he thinks it needs to be used more.
Oh.
And two, how much he loves the Second Amendment and thinks that the right of gun owners needs to be protected. And those are the things that he picked out voluntarily to tell me that those are the reasons that he's running. And I'm not even going to comment on the pros and cons of those two issues. I'm just saying, here's the candidate running against Devin Nunes telling me what motivated him to run. And that was frightening, and I didn't know how to even continue. So I said to him, are there any members of Congress who you admire and look forward to working with and want to model yourself on in any way if you become a member of Congress? And he says, without missing a beat, he said, absolutely. And then named the worst Democrat in from California, the very worst, a guy named Jim Costa, who votes with the Republicans far more than he votes with the Democrats on crucial issues. He's a blue dog. He is so right-wing that a normal Democrat would never recognize him as being a Democrat. And that's who the guy is telling me he wants to model himself on.
Wow.
So how horrible is that? And then you're going to have Democrats saying, well, you know, we've got to beat Trump, so we have to vote for Democrats. And then you're going to put someone like this into office who is liable to be there for 20 or 30 years voting how?
Right.
Against women's rights?
And that's
against gays?
Right.
And that's against everything we believe in as progressives?
Right. And that's why the Blue America Pack is so important.
There are two progressives who have jumped into the race now against Devin Nunes. So hopefully one of them will emerge as a viable candidate.
Well, I'm glad to hear that. And again, that's why Blue America is so important, because you do find the best progressive candidates. Big difference between just having a D next to your name and being a real progressive. And Howie Klein, you go out and you do all the vetting and you make sure that the people that that are endorsed by Blue America are true progressives. And again, in primary season, that's what we need. They need to do somebody needs to do a campaign. Primaries matter. Because this is when we can find the best of the best and really try to, you know, get them some traction. And that's what you do at Blue America. We are out of time.
Oh, we are already.
We are already. Howie Klein, it is always great to hear you. Thank you so much. We'll pick up here next week.
Thanks, Nicole. See you next week.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye. Howie Klein.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, I'll put up a link. I do it every week when I post the podcast. There's a link to the Blue America Pack as well as to Howie Klein. On the Blue America link, you can find, all of the candidates who they have endorsed so far. And donate should you see fit, because that's what they do, is help raise money for those candidates. With that, we're done for the day. I'll see you tomorrow with Gaius Publius.